Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? All right. This is a part of the Purpose Camp Network, and this is a show, Self-Expressions, and I am your host, Brother Robert Pop Hudson. And welcome tonight for episode number 1,311. Man, thank you so much. And I appreciate each and every one of you for joining us tonight, no matter where in the world you're listening to us. We really appreciate your listenership. We really appreciate your support through all the episodes that we have done. We thank you so much. And so with that being said, let me just jump right in, and I'm going to go and just let you know what tonight's topic is, which is turnabout is fair play. Now, before I go in, I want to discuss two things with you, and this is very important, and, you know, this is very much, you know, what I want everybody to just do, and just take in, just soak it in. It's so good what I'm talking to you about, okay? And the first thing I want to talk to you about is it's so important to vote. And why should you vote? Because, you know, now more than ever, you know, your vote counts, especially with this president right now we have in office. And you know, the way things are, you know, basically going down, you know, especially the refusal that he has this place on this country to sign, you know, a stimulus package, you know, until after the election. But, you know, he thought it was so important to wait for that, to actually do that part, to not sign a new stimulus package in office, you know, while he's in office. But, you know, what he did is, you know, he appointed a new Supreme Court justice. You know, when she, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, she passed away. Her dying wishes was to wait until after election to pick her replacement. You know, her body wasn't even cold yet. And he just decided to, you know, just to go ahead and appoint a new one. You know, and that is so baffling. This guy is so unpresidential, you know, right now. And I know, you know, I'm not the best person to run a country, but I know I could run this country and do it better than what he's doing. But that's beside the point. You know, our ancestors, you know, they have paid a heavy price for us to have the right to vote. You know, this price was paid in blood, which, you know, it made a lot of families fatherless, brotherless, sisterless, uncleless, and auntless. This is the problem that we are as a people. You know, we must step up. And, you know, one of the things is hard to do as a person is be a leader. But let me tell you something. I'm a leader, and I know there are many more like me in different forms, different shapes, and different ways. And as a leader, we must step up. We must, you know, change the process. We must alert people. We must just, you know, for everyone that hears the sound of our voice, we must rise up and let people know that we as a person have a right. We have the right. We've earned the right to vote. You must exercise your right to vote. You must. This is the only time that I've noticed that we have every reason why not to vote. We can vote by mail. We can vote, early. We can vote so many different ways. You know, and we just need to exercise that right. We need to make sure, because this price that we have being able to vote has already been paid. It's already been paid, and it's been paid in blood. You know, we must make sure that for all of our ancestors that paid that price, And I know someone has somebody in their family that has paid that price. We must fulfill that obligation. We must exercise our right to vote. We have no excuses. Right now, we must fear anymore. We just can't just, you know, say, hey, I'm just going, hey, you know what, there's enough people voting. No. We must exercise our right to vote. And don't forget, you know, our ancestors paid that price. Many paid it in blood. We must go ahead and exercise that vote. Now, the next thing I want to just talk to you about, you know, before we go into our subject tonight, which is turnabout is fair play. And before I go into that, you know, I just want to go ahead and talk about this next thing, which is the mask. You know, now the most important, you know, things of all is COVID-19. You know, where should I start? You know, people are not taking things seriously. You know, we have to prepare for the long haul, you know, and especially on this one. And I'm talking maybe, you know, maybe 2023 before we get this thing straightened, before we get this thing under control. You know, as a matter of fact, I'm so frustrated in seeing how people are taking this. They're not taking it seriously. And I'm going to tell you how seriously I want to take it. You know, if you ever approach me and you don't have a mask, I want to throw a white sheet right over you. And then I'm just going to say, I thought you were Klansmen, and I'll start beating the crap out of you. But, you know, how I do things and you know, how I think, you know, my thought process is I would tell you, it's really accelerating, you know, and it's just, you know, but the part that I just want to get people to understand the situation. You know, this pandemic is, you know, something that we have to actually grab by the tail. We have to make sure that, you know, we consistently wash our hands, wear a mask when we're around other people. This is nothing, you know, to joke with. You know, as far as a country, you know, we call ourselves the leader of the world, but we fell far short, especially on this here, this here point right here, this pandemic, because we are just one-fourth of the population of the world, but we have the number one, we lead number one in deaths from this pandemic, you know, and that's poor leadership that has happened. This has happened from, you know, we have to really get on this. We have to really take this seriously. Now things are more opening up, more and more. They're opening up more businesses, you know, more opportunities. So now, you know, our deaths are more about the American dollar than anything else. You need to make sure that we're not going to be fodder, you know, cannon fodder for what's going on, okay? And this reminds me, you know, very so much when I went in the military, when, you know, they say, you know, when it comes to us, you know, fighting wars, you know, they put us on the front line. But when it comes to us having an opportunity to get ahead, they put us way behind. You know, this is something that we have to grab the tiger by the tail. This is something that we can control. You know, we can control our exposure, and this is what it's all about. It's about survival of the fittest. It's about survival. And, you know, let me just reel it back a little bit. Okay, so let me just get into our topic, because right now, you know, it always seems like, you know, you're running out of time. Time is short. It seems like time is just slipping away. And, you know, real quickly, let me just go back to our topic, which is turnabout is fair play. The term turnabout is fair play comes from, it's very deep, and it depends on what part of the country, you know, you're from. Is where, you know, turnabout is fair play. So let me just tell you this. So $20 fair play comes from when, you know, you're playing a game and someone is cheating, and you in turn get caught cheating. You say, hey, $20 fair play. But $20 fair play actually, you know, the way I perceive it and the way I've looked at it, it deals with life. And I'm going to talk to you about the life of Paul, the Apostle Paul. And, you know, basically, when I'm going to tell you, you know, a story about when I was, you know, in school, and you know, I'm going back many years, but the fact of what I'm telling you is about somebody that was sitting not directly in front of me, but somebody that I had, you know, I can talk to him. And so the teacher, this is when, you know, back in the day when they were telling you, you know, okay, let's stand up to the Pledge of Allegiance. So it was a guy named John, and the teacher, you know, was basically, you know, meeting the Pledge of Allegiance. And what she did was she asked, you know, everyone, put your, you know, place your hand on your heart, and we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. So what happened was Johnny, you know, he placed his right hand over the left side of his rear end, and the teacher looked at him and said, Johnny, what are you doing? He said, we can't do the Pledge of Allegiance with your hand on your butt. And he basically just said, hey, miss. He said, after several, you know, attempts to place my hand on my heart, he said, this allegiance didn't seem to take place. I don't understand, you know, what happened. So I remember when, you know, I was a little baby, my grandma would visit me, and she would pick me up, and she would pat me right here, and she would say, bless your little heart. And, you know, once I, you know, I've heard that, and I was kind of like trying to decipher, like, what is going on here? And what is he really trying to talk about, you know? So basically what happened was he was saying, he was like, hey, I've tried placing my hand on my heart. I pledged the allegiance. I did everything you asked me for, but obviously my heart is not here. And, you know, when you're a young man and, you know, you're listening, you're hearing things, sometimes you don't see the importance of some things. And the importance of what he did was he basically said, hey, obviously my heart is not here. Obviously everything I'm pledging to, everything that I'm doing is not right. It's not working. I have to do something else. And that's when we find ourselves in life a lot of times where, you know, when you think you pledge allegiance to or what you're doing, that something's not working. Something's not right. So this is where I go into where the Apostle Paul. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, Paul, you know, or better known as, well, he was known, formerly known as Saul, you know, he was persecuting followers of Jesus. Because he thought it was right. He thought it was right in his heart. He thought that these people had no right speaking, you know, as, you know, speaking out of the emperor, of the governors, of the ruling party, you know, basically of the land. But what Saul did was basically he just said, hey, you know what? I'm just going to be judge, jury, and executioner for each and every one of these people I encounter. But the funny thing about Saul, the same thing is funny about us. It's like most of our life, or all of our life, we think that we're going to carry out and we're going to do, you know, what we think is right. But what happens when you bump up against what you think is right, and then what you know to be the truth? You know, so let's go on. So when, you know, basically, and I'm going to go deep in this, and this actually is covered in Galatians chapter 1, verses 15 and 18. So, but when it pleases God who separated me from my mother's womb and called me by his grace, which is verse 16, to reveal his son in me that I might preach him among the heathen, immediately I conferred not with flesh and blood, In verse 17, Jesus went high up to Jerusalem to them, which were apostles before me, but I went to Arabia and returned again into Damascus. In verse 18, then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and abode with him 15 days. So he spent those 3 years in the Arabian desert alone with God for 3 years. God himself taught him. So, you know, actually, you see the application from God himself. You know, study the lives of great men and women of God, and each can point to some form of time they spent alone with God. And, you know, they may have been surrounded by people, but the important part is, you know, they were at a point at which they felt that God was all they had and all their solitude. God shaped and molded them. We can go back to Moses. You know, you can divide his life into three 40-year segments. In the first 4 years, he was in Pharaoh's house. The next 40 years, in some Arabian desert, you know, that we read about, you know, in the last 40, leading Israel out of Egypt to the Promised Land. Which of these three 40-year periods was most important? You know, we're tempted to say that basically it's the latter, but I believe it never would have happened, you know, without the middle period of solitude and formation. You know, what was the last thing Moses did before, you know, leaving Egypt for the desert? He killed a man. He took matters into his own hands in the power of the flesh. So God sent him to the desert, and it took years of sin blasting the pride out of him. You know, he learned that, you know, when you come to the place that God is, all you have is to find yourself. And that's all you need. When you go to David, you know, when he was anointed king of Israel, you know, the reigning king, another Saul became so enraged with jealousy that he actually chased David through the wilderness like an animal. Listen to the cry of David's heart in the seventh psalm. And that goes to seventh psalm, verses 1 and 2. O Lord, my God, and in thee do I point my trust. Save me from all of them that pursue me, and deliver me. Let he tear my soul like a lion, render it in pieces while there is no one, none to deliver. You know, and that's pretty much a despondent man, you know, a man that feels God has forgotten him. But we have to understand that, you know, there is a reason why God does things, you know, and that is covered in Psalms chapter 10, and we only have an hour to make, so, you know, if you will, you know, go ahead and read that. We're just going to go on with you know, what we're talking about, which is turn about his fair play, which is, you know, what God has, you know, he has, you know, that ability to turn things about, you know, in our lives when, you know, things are upside down. And the one thing that I can say that he does save the upright heart. You know, he made a conscious decision, you know, basically that, you know, after Saul came after him, he made a conscious decision to trust God. He learned in the desert all alone that when you come to a place that God is, all you have to find is basically yourself. And that's where, you know, I'll probably bore you to death with what I'm about to say, but, you know, what I'm about to say is just that, you know, of all the, you know, the things that I was doing, you know, in my life, you know, I eventually had to come to a point where, you know, I found that I had to face God. And, you know, how do you do that? Well, basically, you're going to hit rock bottom, or you're going to be, you know, in a desperate or despondent place where, you know, you're going to have to come to the realization that, you know, God is the only one that can save you. And, I've came to that point, I think, maybe two or three times where I had to just understand that, if God didn't intercede and God didn't just step in, I'd be dead right now. I've done so many different things and so many things that were, I just basically deserve to not be here. And how I know that, it was God, because there is no way, not even the best James Bond movie, the best whatever flick you can think of, I would be here, still be here right now today. And the only thing I can say was, do I think that I was just so bold that God would spare me? Or is it that bold that, hey, I'm just so clever that I can get out of anything? No. I realize it for what it is. It was just an act of God himself that has me right now standing here today. And I'm quite sure if you look in your life, there's so many things that you have done or said that you can't understand how you get out, how you can get out of, how you still here, how you still alive. That's what happened to me. And I understand and appreciate it. And I'll talk about that a little later. So let's go over Psalms 13, chapter 1 through 5. How long will thou forget me, O Lord, forever? How long will thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and hear me, O Lord, my God. Lighten mine eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest mine enemies say, I have prevailed against him. And those that trouble me rejoice when I am moved. But I have trusted thy mercy. Thy heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. In solitude, he was learning that when you come to the place that God is all you have, you find he's all you need. His faith grew the most in the Garden of Solitude. Jesus had an incredible 3-year ministry, opening blind eyes, deaf ears, and even raising the dead, and the greatest of all, saving souls. But what do you know about Jesus from age 12 to 30? Nothing. There were silent years in solitude, obscurity, working in carpentry shops, no doubting, communicating with God in prayer, studying, meditation, and preparation. Then at 30, he didn't come on the scene and say, I'm here, you lucky world. He didn't do a direct mailing to all the synagogues saying, I'm available for meetings, conference, healing services. No, he went out into the desert alone for 40 days and 40 nights. He fasted and whipped the devil personally before going out to tell others how to do the same. He began his ministry in solitude as he began each day. And we can go to Mark chapter 1, verse 35. And in the morning, rising up a great while before day, he went out and departed into solitude, a solitary place, and there prayed. Man, I just thank God right there. It is a wonderful thing, when you have, are you in a place of solitude? Can you let God do a deeper work in your soul during this time? Have you had time to go to devotions in solitude? Allow him to, basically radical, do radical spiritual surgery on your life as he needs, to shape you and to become a vessel that you are today. He's the perfect potter. Saul came out of Arabia a different man. He went in a young man, scared, with hatred, bitterness, and no doubt a lot of confusion. But he came out the tender-hearted Apostle Paul. Wow, the tender Apostle Paul. And let me tell you what an amazing transformation that was. For going out and, and just doing, how he did, and there was just something amazing about that. about that very transformation. You know, say, you know, how Saul came out, it just was simply amazing, you know, and it's the same thing, you know, that I want to say to you, or how I came out, you know, was truly amazing. And the way it happened was I you know, it was a transition that was so incredible that I knew something was happening. I knew there was a change coming about, and I didn't know how to handle it. And I was pretty much like Sal. I wasn't as dramatic as what Sal went through. But what I went through was, it was just, I knew that at the end that I was going to come through. I knew at the end that everything that I was doing, that everything I wanted, you know, I was blinded. I was blinded by, you know, basically just the enamored worldly things. When I say worldly things, I say cars, I say jewelry, I say anything that caught the eye, I had to have, and I got it. You know, I basically thought that this is the life. But, you know, as, you know, the transformation started coming on, I realized that this is not what I really want. And so I had to ask myself, what do I really want? And I was so confused for so many years that I didn't know what I really wanted. And to be perfectly honest with you guys, you know, I just found out, you know, what I really wanted. And, I found out this takes a process, you know. And you know, no matter how much, you know, you think you know, you don't know anything. You know, and when God places something in your heart, you know, it's real. And you know what I feel is real, and this is so real and so incredible that pause and realize that it's like, hey, you know, this thing that's in my heart, this is real. This is something, you know, I've always dreamed of. You know, sometimes, you know, the devil places doubt in your heart. But one thing I have to tell you about God really is not a God of doubt. He's a God of hope. He's a God of faith. And the first thing where it starts at, you know, you have to search your heart and find out what you hope, and then you can put it in faith. And the one thing, you know, that I realized I have not done is I have not asked God a lot of questions. And, you know, as I realized that, I didn't ask a lot of questions because I probably didn't want to hear the answer. Or the answer was probably so impossible that I couldn't even fathom that what actually happened is going to be real. And believe me right now, you know, just talking to him, it is real. And so let's get back on topic. So, secondly, God sent him to Damascus, and there God used the tool of suffering. You know, when Paul returned to Damascus from Arabia, he was a marked man. You know, many wanted to kill him. Can you imagine how he must have felt being smuggled out of town, down that wall in a basket like some criminal? It was humiliating. This was just a foreshadow of a lot more suffering, which has yet to come. You know, and this is what is yet to come. So, you know, basically, you just, you know, have to understand, you know, Saul was a bad dude. He was a bad dude. And, you know, and during his persecution of the followers of Jesus, you know, he basically had to suffer. And, you know, we can go to 2 Corinthians for the lesson of what else, you know, he had to endure. You know, 95 stripes for whipping, beaten, stoned, left for dead, shipwreck, persecution, in prison, cold, hungry, and thirsty. Not to mention, you know, his disfiguring eye disease. Yet, the message of our character is what it takes to get you out. And, you know, he must have had a lot of character. You know, what does it take to be mad and get you to quit God, quit going to church, basically? You know, and this is easy right now today. You know, if Paul was a church member today, his suffering, you know, might be, you know, no one shook his hand, nobody called him, nobody cared for that person's, you know, for basically his tone. They didn't give, you know, basically ministry. They didn't want, you know, anything to hear from him. And they didn't even want him to just step in the, you know, the sanctuary. You know, it was a basically a back to school for Sal. You know, it was the second time he had to go to school of hard knocks. And, you know, there are some things, you know, we're stubborn as being human beings that we only learn through suffering. You know, God looked down and saw you like a diamond in the rough. And now he's knocking off the rough edges. His hammer and his chisel aren't always pleasant, but are very necessary. You know, he puts us through the fire to refine us so that the impurities rise to the top. And there, you know, there comes forth a more valuable product. So basically, as he is a sculptor, he took a block of marble and carved a beautiful horse. Someone asks, how did you do that? Easy. Look at the marble block. I imagined the horse, and then I chipped away everything that didn't look like it. It is in the variety that, you know, we learn some of our best lessons. And God is chipping away at us. No matter how long it takes, he is chipping away. You know, man, let me just tell you, you just can't understand how the marvelous sculpture he is, what he does to transform us. So let me go to the season that he instills in us. You know, and then, you know, finally God sent him to Jerusalem, and God used the tool of seizing on him. A seasoned Christian has some experience under their belt. And, you know, we're going to go to verse 26. Why did he go to Jerusalem? And in Galatians chapter 1 says it was to see Peter. Now pay attention. The word see uses basically 1,400 times in the Bible. But this is the only time it comes from the Greek word. You know, where, you know, we get the word, you know, you could say, well, he went to Jerusalem to do a history on Peter and basically the disciples. You see, Paul had the doctrine. God had given it directly to him, but he didn't have the experience. You know, he didn't walk, you know, with Jesus for 3 years like Peter did. You know, he wasn't, okay, I got a line open, so let me just see what happened there. And, you know, I apologize for just that interference, but let me just get back.
You got everything fixed up in there.
All right, so now we're back here. You see, Paul had the, you know, basically the doctrine to you know, given basically directly from God. You know, he didn't have the experience. He didn't, you know, walk with Jesus for 3 years like Peter. You know, he wasn't there when Jesus healed multitudes, but Peter was. You know, he didn't witness the feeding, you know, of the, you know, multitudes. He wasn't there when Jesus arose. He wasn't even saved yet. Peter was. And for 15 solid days, he sat down with Peter and the disciples and said, okay, give me basically the background. Tell me the whole story. Give me the details. Don't leave anything out. You know, man, I would love to have been there to hear, you know, the details that they gave him. And what he was saying was like, hey, basically, I am going to be the detective of the finding. You know, what really is going on here? Is this some kind of fluke of imagination? Is this something that I just simply can't believe, or this is something that is going to lead me on to something. So he basically was like Batman. He was like, I got to find out the details. I got to find out what is going on. So Peter says, well, it all started one day when my brother, Andrew, walks in and gets this. You know, he says, we found the Christ. The moment I laid eyes on him, I knew it was true. And speaking of eyes, I knew this is taken, you know, basically a rabbit trail. But let me tell you about when I walked on the water and when I kept my eyes on Jesus, I could do it. But when I looked away, I sank. And the rest of these guys laughed and they laughed at me. But let me tell you, none of them ever walked on water and Jesus could lock into my eyes. Buddy, yes, indeed. He could see right through me. And after I denied him at his trial, from a distance, our eyes met again. And oh, the power, the moment. I've never forgotten his eyes. And, you know, after someone tells you something like that, you have to say, you know what, I must be a true believer. This is something I really do believe that, you know, he is the Christ. Wow, what an amazing thing, you know. And, you know, Paul basically had to listen over to this and say, hey, you know, you skipped over a lot of stuff. Let's go back. And Peter says, okay, help me out. Let's go through day by day, event after event. And Paul basically admits to Peter pouring himself into it, you know, basically his being his protege. Reduce himself in him, and, you know, all we need is a mentor. You know, someone with more experience than us who has, you know, has been at this for a while, who's been there and done that, and will give you, you know, basically to move you on or get you Peter, help Paul up to the next level, showed him the ropes, and he gained valuable experience as he was seasoned for the, you know, basically practical ins and out of the ministry. Man, ain't that amazing? You know, you need a decipher, you know, for the ministry. And basically to, you know, actually help you out. You know, we need fellowship. We need somebody to actually, you know, show us the rope. And I do remember a lot of times where I go to church where, you know, where you had, you know, those people is actually, you know, there, and they're actually helping you, and they're giving you a blow-by-blow, you know, moment of what it is like to be in the church and what it's like to be in the fellowship. And then they turn around and they say, hey, let's go outside, let's smoke a cigarette, let's do this, or let's smoke a joint. Excuse me. And, you know, the whole thing gets turned around where you start having second thoughts. But those are true to, you know, to the ministry, true to the sanctuary, and true to the word. You know, they're going to put their best foot forward where, you know, there is not a time where, you know, they're going to say, hey, this is, you know, this is this and blase, blase, blase. Hey, I have to say that. Let me go outside, smoke a cigarette. Let me go outside, smoke a drink. Let me go outside, drink a beer. Let me, you know, that's not what, those are the ones that you should run far away from. Because, you know, what Peter did for Paul was he bring him basically up to speed what's going on. He basically solidified the ministry that was going on around him. He solidified that Jesus was the Christ. And sometimes we just need that final confirmation to understand that, you know, what I'm doing is not for nothing. And I'm doing this, and this is real. Okay, so we're going to go to one more thing, and we're going to turn to Acts chapter 11. You know, after Arabia and Damascus and Jerusalem, Paul dropped off the scenes of it, basically just like it disappeared. You know, it turns out, you know, he had gone back home to Taurus, you know, likely to win his family to the Lord. And there he waited on God, you know, and what's next? If you can go ahead and over into Acts chapter 11, verses 25 and 26. Then departed Barnabas to Taurus to seek Saul. which is in chapter 26. And then he had found him. He brought him onto Antioch. He opened the doors, and there is old buddy Barnabas. It's time for ministry. Let's roll. It's time to do something. You know, are you holding a pattern that is, you know, trying to do right? You know, what tools is he using on you right now? You know, solitude, suffering, season. It's all about a learning experience. You know, let's just let God take us back to school. You know, where, you know, that's where, you know, we should be doing where we got the constant process of learning and absorbing, you know, the works of Jesus Christ, where, you know, we have to, you know, understand that, you know, we are all a child of God. You know, and we just need to be that child of God. We just have to understand that God, you know, if we give it over to him, then he will nurture us and he will just change us naturally. You know, I know that we have the impatience, you know, that, you know, we know it all, that, you know, you have to understand that God knows everything. He's the author and finisher. You know, he's the Alpha Omega. When he determines, you know, he has the outcome already. He knows what it's going to be. He's just trying to place us in a position where we're more effective, you know, in our lives. You know, the part that, you know, we don't understand is that he knows what's best for us. We don't know anything that's best for us. You know, the problem that we have is that, you know, we seem to know everything. But we don't. But we don't have the answers. You know, you have to get to call on him. You have to talk to him. So real quickly, I'm just going to go, well, not real quickly. I'm going to take time out with the call of salvation, because the call of salvation, and, you know, like I've stated before, you know, I identify with Paul because I was doing all the wrong things. I was doing things that I shouldn't have been doing. And simply, you know, after you get so far to a lift, you know, it's kind of hard to get called back into it until there's some kind of revelation and some kind of realization that you know, you yourself have to make. You know, God is not going to shove it in your face. He's going to just subtly urge you where, you know, he lets you know. And sometimes, you know, those urges may be painful. Sometimes you may lose friends. Sometimes you may lose family members. Sometimes you may lose uncles, aunts, you know, until we finally get a chance to see, you know, what he's telling us. And it's not meant to take loved ones away from us. It's just meant to get our attention. It's just meant for us to understand that he's called us, you know, in leadership, you know, you're going to be called on. If you're any kind of a leader, if you're any kind of a person of interest, a person that can, you know, help your family members or friends, or you can influence anyone, you know, you're going to be called on. And so one of the things that, you know, I've done, and, you know, you can repeat what I say, or you can just say your own words. But you have to get that connection with God. You have to let him know, Father God, I'm a sinner. I no longer wish to be a sinner. I wish to repent my sins. I wish to return my life to you. And I accept the sacrifice that you have sent, which is Christ. This is so amazing. I'm so glad that you actually sent the sacrifice to save me. And I thank you so much. And for now and forevermore, I repent my sins. I wish to be washed anew. I wish to become a new creature. Once you say that, you have said and pledged yourself to God, where you accepted the gift that Jesus Christ, you know, died for our sins. He didn't have to, but he did. He sacrificed himself. He made himself available to free us from our sin. And only thing we have to do is we have to accept him, and we have to live our life sin free. You know, I know it's not easy to live life sin-free, but, you know, there is something called rededication, you know, that we can do, and that's what we have to do. That's what we have to seek out. You know, that's what we have to do. Sometimes, you know, it's just like anything else. Sometimes it takes more than one try. However many tries you have to do, just do it. Amen. Thank you so much for those that pledge your life to Christ. We thank you so much. So now I want to go ahead and do the announcements real quickly, and then we'll go back into the program. This is the Project Purpose Kingdom Network. I'd like to thank each and every one of you for joining us for tonight's episode, whether you're joining us in the world. We just thank you, and we appreciate, your support here with us at Purpose Kingdom Network. If you want to contact us here via email, you can contact us at purposekingdomnet@gmail.com. You can send comments, questions, concerns. You can simply say hello, send a prayer request, and just let us know that you turn your life into Christ, and we gladly celebrate that. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at purpose_kingdom, where you can do likewise. We thank you. We invite you to like us on Facebook, where you can see our upcoming shows and advertisement. We greatly appreciate that. For those that share with their friends and family members, we just thank you so much for your support in doing your part. All right, and with God's own blessing, we'll be joining us tomorrow evening for, Peripheral Visions, hosted by Antonio Beck. And that's going to be at the 9 p.m. hour. So with God's own blessing, we'll be joining us tomorrow evening at the 9 p.m. hour for Peripheral Visions with Sister Antonio Beck. And we thank you so much for those who share with their friends and family members. We do know that we have some kind of difficulties with some of our listeners at the 319-527-6091 number. That is our only number that we have available right now, but there are options that you can do. I know that there are so many different internet call services, but one of the ones that seems to work for me is Talkatone. You can download that free of charge, and you can make phone calls via Wi-Fi with no extra charge to your phone bill. And, like I said, there are many different options that you can use, but that is one of the options that I have for you available as far as the solution to problem with you using your phone to call us here, where it may potentially charge you 1 cent a minute. I am not sure if they're going to actually do that, but, I know some people especially now on a budget where they have to control their spending, and they have to make sure that, in order to survive, that they don't pay for, extra stuff. But this is the only option I have for you right now. And until we find a solution to this problem, this is the best answer that I have right now. And so I'd like to thank you so much for just, supporting us here, and we go on back into our program. And basically, our topic, we go back to this turnabout is prayer play. Now, the reason why I named my topic was that because the turnabout that Paul did was just really amazing. And that no one could see. And it just all happened with, him going about his business thinking that his motives were pure, and what he was doing with the prosecution of the believers of Jesus, that he thought what he was doing was right. Until Jesus had to overwhelmingly bind him to light and let him know that what he was doing was wrong. Sometimes, you don't have to wait for that overwhelmingly bright light to blind you to get you back to seeing what you should see and see how this thing is turning out. And how you should see things is have unfiltered eyes. We can see for what it really is. You can see people for what they really are. When people cry out for help, and you walk by, walk over them, and don't care, that's not seeing. That's not Christ-like. That's not anything that we see can imagine. And I understand that there are some things, that we can't stand and we don't like. We're going to always see things that we can't stand and we don't like. This could be something that we always going to want to turn our nose up, but we have to see things for what they are. People are people. They're still a human being, I know that, we just can't just constantly go on like we are going on now. Above all things, you know, I'll have to go back to what I was talking about in the beginning of the show, is that we have to exercise our right to vote. You know, we pay this price. You know, our ancestors paid this price. You know, they're no longer here. You know, and I have to say it. I don't want to say it again, but I'm gonna have to, because there's so many people that died. They died. They actually died for the right to vote. So we can't thumb our nose and say that was back then, this is now. No. This is for us now. So we can continue. The reason why they laid their life down is for us to continue, for their blood that was spilled was not in vain. There are so many options for us to vote. Even if you're in a wheelchair, even if you're crippled, even if you've got one eye, even if you don't have no face, you know, they have options for you. Well, you can mail in, you can early vote, you can do so many different things. Go ahead and do it. Matter of fact, I don't care if you just, I'm not going to say that. If you want to vote for Trump, just get out and do your part and vote. You know, we earned that right, and our ancestors laid their life down and spilled their blood. We just need to do our part. And I don't have to mention the past, you know, with the electoral college and all that, but if enough of us are overwhelming in support of who we want to vote for, then it's going to be an overwhelming landslide. We need to get that straight. And the second thing that I've talked to you about, which I want to say again because it's so important for everybody here that wish to continue to live on this planet Earth right now, is just get ready for the long haul. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. We want to all be able to coexist. We all want to be able to flourish on this Earth, but if we don't take precautions, if we don't take this seriously, you know, we are threatening everyone's life. You know, and as things start opening up and things start expanding, you know, we need to make sure that we take the precautions, because it's not only our life on the line, it's other people, not just yours. We need to make sure we do this. You know, we have to wear our mask. I know that, you know, it's uncomfortable. You know, I know it feels like you can't breathe, but we have to endure. You know, the only thing I can suggest to you is that if you feel that way with that mask, stay home. Don't go anywhere. It's your option. You don't have to go anywhere for the most part. But wear your mask. Wear it, please. And not only is there, you know, me just going crazy and just telling people wear your mask, or you don't have a mask, stay away from me. You know, we have to protect ourselves. And the best way I'm going to make this analogy real quick with the mask and stuff like that. So if you will, just imagine we're walking around with no pants on. Yeah, I'm going there. You don't have any pants on. And somebody pees. So if you're not wearing any pants, and he's not wearing any pants, and he pees on you, or most likely he pees when he gets on you, well, we got a problem. Well, let's say he pees and you have pants on. Well, at least the pee won't get on you, you know, like it's actually soaking or whatever. At least you got a chance to take your pants off and get another pair of pants and try to get the pee off the best you can. Well, let's just say he pees and he has pants on and you're there and he pees. Most likely that soaking will be on him and not on us. And most likely we won't get any pee on us, because he has pants on and I have pants on. You know, I'm just bringing this to your attention. I just want you to know, be aware, just to focus and to mentally image what I'm saying so you can be safe. And as usual, I'm going to let you know I love doing this. I love doing the broadcast. You know, no matter, you know, what kind of mood I'm in, whatever kind of, I'm just glad that I'm able to share with you. I'm glad you're able to listen. I'm just glad that, you know, I have this opportunity to, you know, just share to you, you know, my thoughts and my feelings, and actually, you know, just a little bit of ministry in between. You know, I just love doing what I'm doing. I can't imagine doing anything else tonight, no matter what it is in the world right now. So just able to talk to you tonight and process, have fun. You know, I thank you so much, and you know, guys, well, guys, I'll be back in only 2 weeks. And you know, as always, man, it's been a blast. I really love doing this. This is something that, man, I just really, you know, love doing this. And I just thank you for your, you know, everybody for your support, for your listenership, and continue to tell friends about Purpose Camp Network. And with that being said, you know, I'm going to be out of here. Peace.
Jesus led.
He raised me, I will not lose. He saved me, I will not lose. Set me free, I will not lose.
Never want to see me down, I will not lose.
He saved me.